Hey, I'm Dr. Chase Cunningham, Dr. Zero Trust podcast, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Super interesting stuff, I guess. Anyway, I've got Renee Burton here from InfoBlocks. We're going to talk about meerkats. And I know you're wondering, what the hell does a meerkat have to do with cyber? But Renee, why don't you give us a background on who you are, what you do, and then let's get into the meerkat problem.
Yeah, thanks, Chase. So I'm Renee Burton. I run Intel at InfoBlocks. And so InfoBlocks is well known as a DDI, DNS, DHCP, and IP provider, so in the networking space for 25 plus years. But little do most people know, we're actually in the security space as well. And so my group is responsible for finding bad things and suspicious things in DNS for our DNS protection products, the DNS detection and response, large scale kind of things. And we tend to try to look and dive in only to those things that are like crazy weird and nobody else has looked at them, and just specializing on, you know, DNS. So we say, you know, we do that all day, every day. And then before that, I came from NSA. I spent 22 plus years there, and in particular worked a lot in DNS at the end of that time.
Well, we probably crossed the same halls because I was at Fort Meade for quite a while as well.
Exactly. So, that's what I thought.
bad coffee, no lighting, too much air conditioning. Yeah, I remember those days.
No windows.
Right, exactly. No windows. And you're always running across somebody that's running their hand along the wall because they can't talk to humans. So let's talk about the meerkat problem. You guys just published this research on meddling meerkat. And number one, I love the name. And then what is a meddling meerkat?
Yeah, so the idea is, the name comes kind of twofold, right? So meerkat itself is using, in particular, using MX, DNS MX records, which are mail server records. So that's where the M comes from. And then from a timeline perspective, this activity, if you're in a particular network, like we run DNS for a lot of customers, it will pop up and down, you know, so you've got these little meerkats and they're like heads popping up and down. So that's where meerkat comes from. And then it's muddling, it's messing with DNS in general, but in particular, it adds a lot of confusion, and in particularly around the Chinese Great Firewall. So we're like, oh, that's really messy. And so muddling, like as in you're like confusing things up, is where that other part of that name comes from.
Well, in reading through this, I the tactics that are employed here are very interesting, because a lot of people kind of just take DNS for granted. But just from kind of the highlights, so uses servers in Chinese IP space, uses MX record queries, and then also it gets into, and I was totally had kind of forgot about this. I actually felt a little bit, dumb to go like, well, wait, and you have it in here, use super age domains typically registered before the year 2000. Which avoid DNS block lists, because that's kind of crazy. I bet most people haven't thought about the fact that you could actually go that far back and still have a valid address on the internet. Where does all this play out? Like, what's the interaction of this? And I guess follow on to that is the threat side of this. Like, people are always going to wonder, well, what is the threat? Where everyone kind of writes off DNS, which is not a good idea, but right. where is the threat and the risk for this?
Right. The story has got so many crazy things. And I've been looking at DNS for a long, long time. And so you kind of hit on one of those, what the big angles are. And so maybe we can like take one or at a time or something. When you look at it at a face value, so when I'm looking at it, initially in my networks, it looks like what is typically called a random subdomain or a Chinese slow drip DDoS attack. And these are things that I've studied for a really long time. I studied at NSA and I studied since then. And there are particular ones that were run out of China that have very specific kind of characteristics to them. And that's initially what I thought it was. I thought it was a newer variant that I hadn't seen before. But these really aged domains were somewhat unusual. That's not how those things have operated in the past. They tended to use, you know, brand new domains. They generally used Chinese domains, though not always. And they had longer host names, right? Longer random subdomains in our context. And these were fairly short. So it's just like a, this looks like a DDoS, but at the same time, it's certainly not being effective right now. And it doesn't quite look like it. So that's where we started, is kind of what is this all about? And to be honest, at this point, I'm still not sure. However, there's no doubt, because we already know that type of attack works. It's been working for years and years. So we know that a type of attack works. So at any point, someone who really knows what they're doing can just turn the dial on that, and they can make it work. They can bring down a lot of infrastructure. And those attacks work particularly effectively in what I think of as like middle infrastructure. So in ISPs, in the past, they like brought down load balancers. They would crush the entire cache of intermediate DNS resolvers because of all the randomness that was there. And so even with kind of defenses that people built in over time, there's still a lot of things that you can do with a DDoS attack that's coming through DNS. And we do still see those. So that might be what the actor is doing, is like pre-positioning for when they want to hit critical infrastructure, or they want to, you know, just kind of broadly hit a wide range of people. That's one thing. You also mentioned another aspect of it, I think you mentioned, is they're coming through open resolvers. So for me, the next thing is always, how did these queries get here? So it's like, I have to figure out, how did the queries get into our customers? Our customers are Fortune 100s and, you know, governments and things like that. So it's always odd if we're seeing odd stuff that doesn't belong in the network. And so when I go back and peel that onion, those queries are coming through open resolvers. Even the best protected network, like I'm locked down, I'm a really great, you know, bank, and I've got the giant SOC team, and I know everything about my network. Very, very often you'll have an open resolver in your network. So you really have to be very diligent about finding and closing down those open resolvers, because they provide an uncontrolled access point into your network. From an outside a player from DNS. So we believe really, really strongly that you need to find open resolvers. We have special analytics that look for open resolvers and try to alert our customers to them. In fact, they can, as I mentioned earlier, they can come through a DNS denial of service attack, and they can bring down other infrastructure along the way. So that's why we want them out of our customer networks, and everyone should try to prevent them. But that's how they're coming in. So we're like, okay, clear. We've got this. This is open resolvers. They're coming in through these open resolvers. So that was sort of point two. But then the question became kind of these other points is, what are they doing and how are they doing it? So the next thing that was really odd was these mail server records. And this goes to like networking geeks really understand, you know, how do I get mail from one location to another, right? Most of us don't know. We really don't have a clue. But in reality, in order to send mail, there is a specific sequence of DNS queries that has to happen. I have to first make a query so I want to send mail to, you know, someone at Gmail, right? I'm going to send mail to, Chase at your Gmail account. The first thing I need to do is find the domain name, the host name in particular, for your mail server, for Gmail mail server. So I ask that question in DNS, and then I'll get back a name record. And, you know, it'll say mx1.gmail.com or google.com, whatever it is. Now I have a name record. Well, you just can't send data on the internet with a name. That's not how the internet works. The internet works on IP addresses. So you have to have a follow-up query, which is give me now the IP address for that mail server record, and then boom, and then I get that. So mail transmission, like real mail transmission, always occurs in pairs. So the next thing we noticed with Muddling Meerkat, and again, we already figured out the open resolver, but like where you start to become really confident that something is totally sus was there's no second record. So there's a MX record lookup, and then there's no IP record lookup. So now I know, okay, nobody's trying to send mail. This is not a mail thing. It's something else. They also had, you know, some other kind of records they were using, but the mail server records are such a great way to analyze DNS and find strange, nefarious behavior in it for anyone who wants to work in the field, because they have to come in pairs. They must come together. And that gives you a really good hard, you know, hard point of decision making. So now we had mail records in Infoblox, enterprise, you know, big fancy people's enterprise networks. They don't belong there. They're not really mail queries. They're probably coming from open resolvers. We're able to find, you know, figure out they're actually coming from open resolvers. So that was our side of the picture. Does that make sense so far?
Yeah, no, I mean, this is very interesting, just because it's one of those ones of, I would say most folks like are kind of beating their heads around, okay, malware exploit, ransomware exploit, you know, kind of the typical thing. Here, we're talking about manipulation of DNS with some very interesting tactics and procedures. The more that I read through the report, definitely reeks to me of APT type actions out of China, because this is their typical, you know, plan of action, if you will. And then getting further into that, like I wasn't aware of some of the stuff you put in this report about the way that it works when you actually kind of throw stuff at the Great Firewall of China and the responses that you get. Can you expand on that a little bit? Because it's very crazy to me to think that you run a very simple like dig or whatever, and you get these weird results back.
Yeah. So that's kind of like the next thing. So I could see, in particular, I could totally see everything in Infoblox, right? So like, okay, something's up. I know what it is. But now you have to turn to your friends. Your friends are these anonymous people that have various different accesses in the world. And, you know, and then it's kind of like, hey guys, this is what I see. I have ground truth. I know this is what's happening. So let's go figure out what you guys see in the world. And let's see if we can push these pieces together. And what we were able to see from their accesses, from the anonymous people's accesses, was these elements about the Great Firewall. But to your point, let me step back a check just a second. So if people aren't familiar, the Great Firewall of China was built a long time ago. It's matured over time. And in essence, people think of it as censorship, right? They think about it as censorship. But in fact, really a lot of what has happening is it sees every DNS query that comes in or out of Chinese IP space, right? Regardless, our Chinese IP space is in Los Angeles, right? It is in Nevada, it is in London, right? But so it's all Chinese IP space all over the world, in and out. And it also has this other really interesting thing that people, well, it has like so many things. It's very well studied. It has this interesting behavior that it is it's an observer on the side. Like, those of us in cyber threat, we like to say adversary on the side, but it's an observer on the side. If you want to think about it as an adversary, you can. It meaning that it doesn't actually intercept a DNS query on route and change it. The DNS query is happening. The response is happening. But if it makes some internal decisions on that, if it wants to, it tries to inject a response, and it ends up in a race condition because it wants to be the first DNS response back to the query. And so if you properly set yourself up, you can actually see, you know, both queries come back. So it's an observer on the side. It injects things. It doesn't actually manipulate them in the kind of sense of like changing things in the middle. But the other interesting thing about it, and why researchers have done so much with it, is unlike a lot of other big firewalls, other countries have firewalls, by the way, but this is the only one that you can poke at. So it's transparent in that sense that you don't need to you don't need to believe me. You can actually just go do it. If you pick a random IP address that's in China IP space and you do a dig on your command line and ask it a question, you'll get it. You know, there are certain circumstances, where it'll say, I won't give you an answer. But for instance, if you ask a random IP address, nothing to do with DNS, for an address for Google, it'll give you an answer. It's not likely to be the right answer. And you can just do it over and over again, and you'll see that it's giving you different kinds of answers. Those might be someone's home modem in Texas. It might be some random location in London. It's kind of unclear how it decides what IPs to return, but it'll return kind of these random IPs. So that's a characteristic of the firewall that you can poke.
Yeah, it's really weird because when you if you're a network person, for those of us that have done this, like you expect kind of the result that you're looking for. It's almost like not even a query. It's almost more validation. Like if I send this, I should get this response, and you don't. You get a weird kind of kickback. So there's a lot of like this is kind of the Rubik's Cube from hell on the networking side for folks that are interested in this. And if we go a little further, so let me put my tinfoil hat on here for a second, because there's obviously a campaign going on somewhere, somehow. There's obviously a level of engagement with what appears to be some sort of nation state type actor. I don't know why I'm saying that. So actor anyway. And we are coming up on election year and things like that. You even say in your report, is this pre-positioning? Is this, you know, organizational sort of getting ahead of what may be follow-on attacks? I would suggest that seems logical to me. What is your observation on like the actual follow-on outcome of this? And just to be clear, folks that are listening, like this is just thinking. This is not, don't take this and write it down and go build a bunker in your backyard or anything.
That's right. We can only really speculate, right? Because we, the actor, there's no doubt that the actor has the ability to control the Great Firewall, because we see responses specific to this activity that you cannot elicit yourself from the Great Firewall. And we know you can elicit responses from the Great Firewall. So it's been studied a lot. This activity is different. So we know that that's the case. And then it's been going on since October 15th, 2019. So then the question, as you said, right, becomes like, why? And so in essence, in some ways, we can only speculate. And we've seen, you know, recently continued heightened alarms, again, just last week, from CISA and FBI in particular about this pre-positioning. So in part, they're talking a little bit differently. They're talking about being able to get inside of, or having Chinese operations that are inside of government and other trusted networks and sitting for a long time to pre-position for attacks. And they're warning sort of people of that strategic move from the Chinese. And when I look at this, this is deliberate, strategic, thoughtful. You know, it is not like, you know, I was a hacker when I was a kid. I was a pretty big hacker when I was a kid. We do not have large attention spans, right? So random hackers are either, you know, people like me are playing around for this or that. We get bored very easily. We move really quickly. We always want to do new fun things, right? That's our kind of attitude. Or, you know, we're cyber criminals and we want to get money. So we modify our things to get more and more money. It really does take a nation state to sit and monotonously, deliberately do the same thing over and over again. So there, you know, both of us having come from these cultures, right? There has to be a reason. And the only reason I can think that you're doing that is that you are pre-positioning for something that's much more interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I like when I read this, I was like, okay, this to me is, I mean, when I was doing stuff back at the fort without getting myself in trouble, like we would call this kind of parking for exploitation. You know what I mean? You're setting things up, you're taking your time, even if it is not actually going to be used during a campaign, an attack or whatever, you get a lot of information this way. There's a lot of good recon that can come out of it. This, to me, if I was the government, would be very concerning as far as the type of longevity that's going on. I always tell people when they're thinking about threat groups, think about Chinese APT like crocodiles. They'll just lie and wait for, they can eat once and wait for a year, and then they'll eat again. And they're just sitting there. If you're lucky, you might see a couple bubbles come up, and that's kind of where, that's all the notice you're going to get before, you know, you're drugged down to the depths. And that's kind of what I think we see here. So on the follow-on side of this, that you guys do actually talk about the way indicators, the target domains, and it's interesting too. So these domains host no website, they host illegal content, and basically you're saying you should block them without impact. There's a list of them. And then there's also domains host websites that might negatively affect your network. So they got to be kind of careful with that. But the whole point of y'all publishing this is to get this out to the community and say, because you even say in your report, if you see this, like, report it, share this information with the community. This is very much a first heard type of activity that we're seeing at this level of internet. And to me, this is exceptionally concerning. I honestly am not even, I don't even care about ransomware and malware and whatever else like that. That's carte blanche. Like I could, you know, if you want to stop ransomware, turn off PowerShell. There you go. I just solved your ransomware problem. But you can't turn off DNS. This is an entirely different animal.
Right. You absolutely can't. And I think, you know, Jade, you're hitting on this. The really critical thing is this operation, and I'm sure there are many others, right? It's no doubt, like, there are many others. I'm not saying in any way this is completely unique. But the fact that you cannot see the entire operation from any one vantage point. I have a lot of friends. They have a lot of data. And no one of us could see, no one of us could even see very much of it, right? So, you know, I have ground truth in enterprise networks. So that's a really kind of gold world to work in. But I don't have like the internet backbone. I don't have like various other things that happen that people collect on. I don't have all that giant NetFlow data. But each of them, they just saw, like, for instance, if you have this kind of really broad spectrum collection, you're trying to get, you know, various backbone or internet data, you don't actually have truth. Because people lie and inject stuff about DNS all the time. So a lot of your DNS may just be absolutely false. So unless you can partner your DNS up with someone like myself who has ground truth, you don't see anything. So that's, to me, the scary thing is there are probably many other, not just Chinese, but operations in which people have so cleverly operated, in particular DNS, no one pays any attention to DNS, that they can only see a tiny little piece. And as that tiny piece, you're kind of like, I don't know, it's not that scary, right? Put it together and you're like, what?
Yeah, it's the I guess, what was it? The Higgs boson or the black hole thing about, you don't see the black hole, you see the gravity surrounding it and all the stuff being sucked in. And right. Eventually you go, that's a black hole, I should stay away from that.
Right, exactly. It's kind crazy.
Same approach here. So, you guys are obviously going to be at RSA. This should come out here pretty quickly. Where can folks find you guys? How do they run it across y'all? Where should we get this research? And of course, I'll post the link as well. But any information there?
Yeah, we're going to have a booth on the floor. I do not know the booth number, okay. but we can get that. So we're going to have a booth on the floor. Both myself and one of my researchers who's done a lot of amazing research. We have a data scientist as well. We're going to be actually on the floor, not salespeople. We really welcome people to come by. We're giving tech talks into not only Muddling Meerkat, but several other actors and DNS you know, related threat intelligence kind of things throughout the day for all the days there. We're starting in the evening on Monday night, and just welcome people to come by and, you know, talk about DNS and like, why should you care? Because it's not, most of us come out of the reverse engineering world, frankly, right? Or we come out of the pentester world. We come out of a different spectrum and we don't even we don't even realize that you have this service that is underpinning all of these actors. And that, as you said, you can't block that. You just can't. So you have to think about, you know, how do I protect, I can't just stop DNS. So how do I protect myself in this environment?
Yeah, you can stop DNS if you want to not have internet. I mean, that's pretty much that's if you just want to rip stuff out of the wall, you're good. That's basically what you have. Yeah. So okay, that's awesome. I guess the last question I have is InfoBlox gonna be giving away Meerkat like fluffies or something at RSA? Because you know the marketing side here is gold. There could be, you know, Meerkat little giveaways and you know, those types of things. So maybe we'll see Meerkats at RSA. I don't know.
You will see. I would say last year we had other vendors come up to me when we had Decoy Dog, and other vendors said to me, your brand team nailed it.
Nice.
And I would say they nailed it again. So we will have some super cute fluffies.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I'll definitely have to come by the InfoBlox booth and check that out. Cause if I don't come home with a Meerkat stuffy for my daughter, I'd be in trouble.
So. Awesome.
Great. All right. So Renee Burton at InfoBlox, I'll post this. I'll throw this up on the link. All you folks that listen, check it out. Go talk to InfoBlox if you're going to be at RSA, read their research. This is really interesting stuff. I mean, I spend all day, every day reading through research, and when you see something come across that's this detailed about something as fundamental to the internet as DNS, pay attention, people. Renee, thank you so much for jumping on today.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Disclaimer, the information in this podcast episode, aka episode, is provided for general information purposes only. By listening to this episode, you understand that this is not specific technical guidance from the host. No information contained in this episode should be construed as security advice from the author, host, or guest, nor is it intended to be a substitute for security advice on any particular subject matter. No listener of this episode should act or refrain from acting on the basis of any information included in or accessible through this episode without seeking the appropriate technical or other professional advice on the particular facts and circumstances that are discussed. This podcast is for informational purposes only. All views expressed therein are those of the host and his guest and should not be considered as being endorsed by nor related to the host or the guest's employers.